This podcast is rooted in a singular dream: to aid our culture's growth by fostering collective education, encouraging open discussion, and most importantly, nurturing and inspiring new generations of my transgender siblings. Here's to a transer future.
My vagina. My vagina. My vagina. I just like saying that.
Oh, hey there. You're pretty cute. Haven't seen you around here before. Come here often? Oh, you work here. So you're like here to stay. Oh, fuck yeah. They fired the other guy? Honestly, I never liked him. Yeah, what was his name? What was that? Oh, yeah. Penis. That's right. Penis used to be there. Yeah, penis used to be there, but now here you are, all shiny and new and pretty and, well, you're mine. I mean, you were always mine, but 4 months ago, I woke up from a surgery and they were like, you have a vagina. And I'm like, cool, I'm on a lot of drugs. And then 4 days later, when they removed the bandages, that resident assistant lady took one very intense look into your eyes, and said, ugh, Rachel's an artist. And I looked down at you and looked up at her and I said, that's art? No, seriously, I said that. Or I thought it really loudly. I don't know. They still had me on all that pain stuff. But you were categorically not cute back then. Art was a bit of a stretch. But may I say, now I see art. I look at you and you're a fucking masterpiece. My dazzling David shipped out of the metaphorical penile stone by my very own private Michelangelo, aka Rachel Bubon Wagner at NYU Langone. And you're mine. All mine, no one else's. Nope, you're mine. No more staring at myself in undies in the mirror, dick yanked back between my butt cheeks and wishing my coochie would just sit nice and flat up against my pelvis. No more staring intensely at someone's face as they take stock of my naked body for the first time, wondering what they're thinking, wondering if they're realizing they actually think my body is kind of gross, and now they're second-guessing their impulsive decision to go home with that hot trans girl who absolutely wrecked them at pool in the back of Henrietta Hudson. Not based on a real example. Or several real examples, for that matter. Nope, none of that. Now it's just me and my pussy. My pussy. I can't wait for all the climactic adventures we're going to have together. I'm very grateful that you're mine. This episode mentions transphobia, discrimination, violence, genital sex, and surgery. It's also really funny, if I do say so myself. This very special episode of Trans and Caffeinated, I went to NYU Langone and all I got was this brand new pussy, is brought to you in part by otters holding hands while they sleep. No, wait, wrong episode. Ah, yes, Anchor. Thanks, Anchor. You're a pal. Cheers, queers. We'll get back to the show in just a moment. Before we do, I have a really important favor to ask you. I record this production with limited resources, right here in the closet. Literally. So every little bit of support goes a long way towards getting this work out to more people who may benefit from it. I want to take a second to share a few ways that you can help do that. Trans and Caffeinated is now on Patreon, where you can pledge monthly donations. Patron donations are a really important way that this show stays alive. and you'll also get some cool patron perks. If you can't financially contribute, there are still plenty of equally helpful ways that you can help out. You can take a moment to give Transuncaffeinated a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can head to Transuncaffeinated on Instagram and Facebook and share episode graphics to your story. Or maybe you know somebody who would also enjoy the show and you want to recommend it to them directly. The stories I'm able to share on this show are super important to me. And if they're important to you too, it would be incredible if you could take a moment right now before you go on with the show to complete one of these steps. Thank you sincerely for everything that you do. And now back to the show. Welcome to this special edition of Transuncaffeinated called I Went to NYU Langone and All I Brought Home Was This Brand New Pussy.
Yay!
I'm here today with my friend and sound editor, Joey, she, her. Joey, say hi, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is friend and sound editor, Joey, she, her.
What a good name.
How is everybody doing? I know that all of you out there can't actually answer me, but I hope you're all doing well.
I hope you're all drinking some booze or on your commute to work or... excited to hear very weird and personal details about my vagina.
Look, it's the most ultimate form of podcasting when you're revealing intimate details like this, I would say.
I mean, I habitually do this. Like, this is just kind of my thing, is just talking about trans bodies.
Honestly, like editing this podcast, I feel like I've learned more about your life through editing this podcast than I have in any conversations we've had before.
Well, to be fair, like, people don't necessarily like sit around and like talk about their past when they're just hanging out day to day, you know?
That is very true. I mean, I feel like a lot of the time it ends up that way with me, and especially with me and my trans friends, because a lot of the times we just kind of bond through talking about our trauma and our experiences, including our experiences as trans people.
This is true.
You just had an experience as a trans person.
I did just segue. Have a segue into talking about my vagina.
It is February 26, 2021 at like 10:30 a.m. I'm currently, as transes do, running late for my doctor's appointment to get my medical clearance for surgery. I have been anxious this entire week, so that's real fun. And yeah, it's T-minus, I don't know, 69 minus 20 days until bottom surgery, otherwise known as 49, but you know, 69 minus 20 is funnier. I'll have a brand new pussy soon. Yeah, cool. Bye.
So today is, not when you're listening to this, but as we're recording this, is early July 2021. I got my pussy installed on April 15th, so I am almost 3 months post-op. Joey, you remember the first time you saw me after surgery, like a week after surgery?
I remember you were very miserable in that bed there during your recovery period. But who could blame you?
I mean, to be fair, they had just carved into my pelvis.
From a very literal standpoint, a physically traumatic experience.
Yes, very physically traumatic experience. Well, that's a thing I didn't really anticipate, is like, even though obviously this was a good thing happening to my body, like, my body interpreted it as a major physical trauma. Like, over the past few months, I've had to like sort of like teach my vulva that like touch can feel good, touch can be a good thing, because the only touch it knew and the only sensation that my vulva knew for especially those 2 weeks, but I mean mostly most of the past 3 months, was pain, was discomfort. And like, I've had to like reteach my body that sexual pleasure is something that can feel good. The recovery is not linear. I mean, nothing was as bad as the first 2 weeks. Like, I mean, I was basically horizontal for the first 2 weeks, like walking exacerbated my phantom penis pain, which is a weird thing that I never would have anticipated, nor did anyone talk to me about.
I feel like I've heard some people talking about that before, but it's like been very, very rare in like those like specific sections of Twitter where people try to like boost like lesser heard trans experiences.
Yeah. And that's the thing about like trans information sharing. And that's why I am so candid about my experiences, is because that information is just not that accessible. Like, there aren't that many folks sharing about it, writing about it, talking about it.
I know that I legitimately did not know super much about this whole process before, like, I was talking to you and Em about it.
Yeah.
It feels like a kind of mystifying process that shouldn't really be as mystifying as it's made out to be.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is that, like, the process is changing all the time. The information that is true now was not true 5 years ago, and is also very different surgeon to surgeon and person to person. So unless you find someone from your specific surgeon who's had it within the past like 2 or 3 years, it's really hard to even know that the person you're getting your information from is going to give you information that lines up with something similar to your experience.
Absolutely. And I know I've spoken to a lot of people who've had especially issues finding doctors who would like perform like gender affirming surgeries, who even like seem to know what they're talking about regarding trans people. I had a couple of friends who recently had top surgery. They actually talked about the whole process on like on their own podcast, which I also had. Gay Breakfast. They're very fun, great group of people. They have like two whole episodes where they were talking about both of them had experiences with this in very different ways. So many like loopholes that you need to jump through even just to find someone who knows what they're talking about.
Oh yeah.
One of them only wanted like a partial reduction, and one of the doctors didn't seem to understand that that's a thing you can do.
It's not uncommon, but it's just not talked about. I had a friend that did that recently, and they were like, yeah, this is the thing. And people were like, oh, I never heard of that before.
Jesse's planning to do that as well.
Fuck yeah. For listeners, Jesse was on an episode of this podcast and is also Joey's partner.
Yay.
Yeah. So back to phantom dick syndrome.
Yes, phantom dick syndrome.
So it was a very strange sensation. So my body expected there to be a penis there. And so the only way that I can describe what phantom dick syndrome is like is,
it's weird, but it's going okay so far. But yesterday I started having a ton of phantom pain, like in my penis, not penis. Like it like feels like my penis is trying to like push itself out from my body, even though I don't have a penis anymore. And that's because a lot of the skin that was like on my shaft is now internal, and it's a very, very weird and confusing feeling. So that's what's going on with me. Sometimes actually dilation helps it, because my brain processes like, oh, this skin is not outside you anymore. Just lying here, staring down at my vulva, trying to get my silly little brain to process the fact that there's no penis there, so that I will stop having phantom pain all the time, especially when I'm walking, that feels like my penis is trying to rip outside of me. And I'm like, brain, this body doesn't have a penis. And brain is like, erect penis, erect penis. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I did away with that material. And they're like, erect penis is like the fucking like Daleks or some shit. I don't know. I've been watching Doctor Who. But yeah, it's been weird. Now I'm just staring down at my junk.
It felt like my dick was tucked between my legs, but tucked so far that it was tucked up inside me, and that I was getting hard while I was walking, but my dick wasn't able to swing forward. So instead, it was just tearing in half.
That's so fucking surreal.
And then sometimes, like, because the tissue that was once the tip of my penis was then my clitoris, one thing that I would do to dull the phantom dick syndrome was, like, apply either pressure or ice to my clitoris, either, like, to desensitize it or to tell my body, like, hey, your dick is not trying to rip out of you, actually, and here's what is there instead. Here, feel this sensation. And then, like, I took, like, CBD one time that accidentally had THC in it. And for those of you who know me, I do not handle THC well. I do not smoke weed for that reason. And I had, like, a three-hour-long anxiety attack where the pain was just so, like, the only thing I could think of, the only thing I could focus on, like, no matter how much I iced, no matter how much I, like, did anything. And then eventually I just, like, exhausted myself to the point that I fell asleep until I was no longer high.
Ouch.
For those of you listening, like, yes, it was absolutely worth it, but the first few weeks were so, so incredibly difficult. And, like, I had gone through a lot of personal trauma around the same time.
It was a really, really tough time for you then.
Yeah. Hi, friends. Today is February 27th, 2021. It is T-minus 69 minus 23 days until my bottom surgery, otherwise known as 46. But I like to give myself a good laugh because I am panicking. I launched my GoFundMe yesterday after a while of being sort of unsure about what I was going to do. And I'm struggling. I'm having a very hard time. Like, I'm definitely excited to be all healed up and, you know, have a vagina. That's cool. That's wonderful. But the road to getting there and the anxiety about the recovery and the anxiety about if everything's going to go well is really heavy right now. And I expected this. I expected that it would be a pretty tough time. Did the thing that I always do and load myself up on a bunch of work and shit that I have to do in this month, when all I want to do right now is to kind of curl into a ball and be anxious and do nothing. I got about $5,000 in support from people in the last 24 hours alone. And I'm just so touched by the way that my community has shown up for me in this really scary time. You know, there were times in my life where I never thought I would get to where I am today. And there were times in my life where I had nobody that I could tell what I was going through and nobody who would understand. And over the past 7 years that I've been out, I have worked so hard to surround myself with community, surround myself with people who see me for me. And coming from Carl Brook, my abusive Southern therapeutic boarding school, where I was outed to my family and told I would never be a real woman, it has been so beautiful and powerful to see this little community taking shape around me over the past almost 7 years now that I've been home. You know, I came out at 18. I transitioned at 20. I'm going to be 26 next Friday. And I think for me, sometimes it's hard to see myself as deserving of this love and support that people have shown me. But then I remember that we're all deserving of it. I am someone who likes to be there for others, who likes to support other people. And it's not always easy to remember that I deserve that as well. And I think right now, these next couple of months, I really need to focus on myself, because this is a wonderful thing, but it is also the scariest thing I've ever fucking been through. And that's saying something, because I've been through a lot. I am going to be, you know, documenting a lot of what I can over these coming months in the hope that it sort of normalizes the reality of the experience of approaching bottom surgery, because, yeah, it is this beautiful, wonderful thing. And I and a lot of trans folks have wanted this for a long time. And there were times where I wasn't sure if I wanted it, but I ultimately came to a peace with that decision. And at the same time, that doesn't make this period of time any less scary. And I want people to know that. I want cis people to know that. I want people to understand, you know, this is not easy. This is a lot to carry. This is very heavy. And I don't spend a lot of time resenting being trans because I love being trans and I love who I am. But right now I feel like it would have been really fucking easy to just have been born with a vagina. And I don't want to not be trans, but I don't want to be going through what I'm going through right now. Hey friends, the date is March 1st, 2021. It is 4 days before my 26th birthday, apparently. That came out of nowhere. It is T minus 69 minus 25 days until my bottom surgery, otherwise known as 44 days. This month is the month before bottom surgery, officially. Some updates. So as of yesterday, the place where I was initially planning to recover fell through. And that has been really hard. Last minute now, I'm having to scramble to figure out a place to stay. I'm really grateful. A number of folks have reached out to me offering some options thus far, which has been super, super amazing. I am super blessed to have a friend who was on a previous episode of this podcast, M. Rob Lay, and Faye is willing to come with me and be my caregiver, which is just super beautiful and such an important reminder of the way that the trans and non-binary community shows up for each other in times of need.
It is an example of community care, the way that Mara and I and Em and I have both discussed it on this podcast.
It's just a really amazing reminder that I have folks that are willing to show up for me in my time of need. In terms of medical coverage, I still do not have an official quote from my insurance. I launched a GoFundMe a couple of days ago where I am asking for $15,000, and that is the cost that I will be responsible for, in addition to now I'm having to pay for lodging for probably about 6 weeks, as well as food costs that I, you know, didn't really have to worry about before with my initial lodging situation. And so that's been really tough. But, you know, insurance hopefully should come through within the next, like, couple of weeks. I'm getting my last letter tomorrow. I've had to update all of them because my initial letters were over a year ago, and so my insurance won't take them. Things are coming together. Really wish I didn't have to work this month, but I do. That being said, I'm very grateful that I have the ability to make money to help, you know, fund some of my surgery for myself. And just trying whatever I can to get through this next month. I'm going to continue documenting the time over the coming months. The sound quality might not be the best because I'm not traveling with my recording stuff, but I will have some stuff on here for us to listen to. And yeah, I'm, you know, creating this episode so that cis folks can sort of experience what it is like to go through this process, but also to give some trans folks some insight into, like, you know, my hope for the series is I am feeling all this anxiety right now, but I'm hoping that by the last recording I do for this episode that I'm feeling super positive and it was all worth it. And, you know, everything, like, you know, telling trans folks that if this is a step that is right for you, things will work out well in the end. And I'm also just kind of trying to do this to show myself that, to show myself, you know, when I listen back to these recordings, yeah, Ariel, you were feeling really, really shitty just a month and a half, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and look at where you are now. You can get through this.
It is April 15th, 2021 at 5:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is, after a very long time of waiting, the day of my bottom surgery. We are about to find parking. I am anxious, of course, but ready. and at peace and anxious for the recovery, but excited for 3 months from now when I will have a, ow, I just hit my head in the car, fully functional vagina. Thanks for following along on my journey. Y'all are pals. Also, fun little meta tidbit for you. I chatted with Joey, my sound editor, on the phone for 2 hours this morning to distract myself from my impending, life-changing major surgery. All right, thanks, bye. You know, I had a friend who had died 2 weeks beforehand, one of my closest friends. So it's just a really tough time, like emotionally and physically. And it was just like one of the darkest times of my life that has now led into like one of the most beautiful parts of my life. And obviously a lot of that trauma is still stuff I'm working through, but like...
Was it the night before you went in for the surgery? We were talking on the phone. You were like kind of processing all the emotions and like the trauma that you had been experiencing then.
Yeah. Yeah, and trigger warning for, you know, self-harm and suicidal ideation here. But I had to contact a crisis hotline because I was off my hormones, and I specifically had gone off my spironolactone, which is my testosterone blocker, which like sent me into a spiral, and I relapsed on self-harm and was contemplating suicide like 3 days before my surgery, and they almost canceled it like 3 days before.
Oh, no.
Because I was just in such crisis from all the trauma and then also going off my hormones and all of the stress of going through a major operation.
I can't imagine how much worse even that would have like made you feel if it was canceled as a result of that.
Yeah. Well, and they were like, do you want to delay it? We have next dates in 2022. I was like, no. I have waited 2 years for this since God, booking no. this fucking operation. No. No.
2022. No.
No, that's not even a real year.
That seems made up. That many twos cannot exist in a year.
John Mulaney has a joke about like, someone's like, oh, you'll pay it off in 2035. And he's like, that's not a real year. The part where he's talking about college and he's like, hey, John, remember us? We're college. It's been a while since you've given us money. Yeah, college. It's been a while since you've housed and taught me.
Oof. I feel like you can make like a similar joke about the medical industry, at least in the U.S.
Yeah, and I'm still not squared away with my finances because they keep like charging me and then refunding me the money and then charging me again and then refunding me. And I'm like, okay, what? When am I going to like, it's very strange. My insurance is kind of dicking me around. Like I definitely have the finances to cover it because I raised $11,000 for my beautiful community of people. Super, super appreciative. So I have the funds to cover it, but I just still don't know exactly how much I owe.
They're just kind of jerking you around with what you're actually supposed to do next.
Yeah. And then I have like other, like my insurance is just being a dick. And like I have different insurance than I had when I had my surgery. So like, I don't even like, so it's like I'm squaring away my final like stuff from when I did have that insurance, but I don't have that insurance anymore. So I don't know if that's a factor in why they're being weird, but like, I can't get a clear answer out of them. And this probably has nothing to do with it. Insurance companies just suck. But
hot take, insurance is transphobic.
Insurance is transphobic, honestly. So yeah, so pussy.
Yes.
Yes, my vagina.
I am on my third full day of dilation, which means that 4 times a day for 15 minutes, I have to stick a giant dildo up my pussy to keep it open. Now, while I'm recovering from surgery, that's sometimes really painful. And I've also been gassy and constipated, which makes it worse. I think after I've dilated for a few months, I'm going to make a video called, like, things to make dilation easier. Because I've already learned a couple, like, turning my hips outward and putting myself under warm blankets so I'm not shivering and deep breathing. But right now, I'm just, like, mostly focused on getting through it. And honestly, you don't think about like 4 times a day for 15 minutes plus like 10 minute setup. And also the 15 minute timer doesn't start until it's all the way inside me. And that's hard. There is resistance. Anyway, when you account for all that, plus the fact that I still have a fucking catheter in and have a UTI, like aftercare and pain management takes up like most of my day. But I'm still cute and my pussy looks great. So, like, what am I complaining for? Anyway, I'm going to keep posting videos throughout the month while I heal with what I learn. Love y'all.
I do remember while I was there visiting you for the couple days I was helping out there, you showed me this one piece of media that you said was giving you like a lot of comfort through that time.
Yes. Ah!
I'm not saying the name of it because I want you to introduce it.
Oh my God. Yes. Ah, okay. So it is, I've watched it just so many times. It's called Manifest Pussy. It's by an artist and actress named Shakina Nafak. And she did a one woman musical about her experience with bottom surgery. I watched it literally the night before my surgery. Like, I pulled an all nighter because I didn't want to work out waking up at like 3 a.m. And there was this one moment in the show where she just was talking about like how, like, the divinity of trans people and the sacredness of trans people. And there was one thing that she said.
I came across this passage, Matthew 19, verse 11 and 12. He said to them, he being Jesus, right? He said to them, not many of you can receive this saying, only to those to whom it is given. There are those who are born eunuchs from their mother's womb. There are those who are made eunuchs by men. And then there are those who make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. Let the one who is able to receive it, receive it. Well, shit. I'm a fucking eunuch for the kingdom of heaven.
I'm a goddamn eunuch for the kingdom of heaven. Yes, that is the line.
That is a hella powerful phrase.
Right? And there is, like, she goes on about that phrase and about what that means to her. And it was like, I mean, my surgery was at 6 a.m. So we left the Airbnb at like 5. So I was probably watching that moment in that musical at 4:30. I have been contemplating this surgery for 6 years. I had watched that musical before, and I don't know why, but it took me right up until that moment hearing her say that I was going to be a goddamn eunuch welcome to the kingdom of heaven until I was finally at peace with my decision to go through bottom surgery, because it was not an easy road to making that decision.
You were telling me that you were going kind of back and forth on the decision for a while.
Because the thing is, a lot of the decisions we make as trans people are a direct result of how we are treated living within a cis-sexist society. And that doesn't make any of our decisions less valid.
Absolutely.
But like, a lot of the things that we have to do, a lot of the things that cause our dysphoria, at least I'll speak personally, like, a lot of the things that have caused my dysphoria don't necessarily have to do with my body itself. It has to do with how cis people interact with my body. Like, my dysphoria around my penis had very little to do with me seeing my penis. Like, I didn't love it. My discomfort around my penis really was a result of like how other people would perceive me based on the fact that I had a penis, based on how people would behave towards my penis during sex, like how they would interact with it. If I was in the beach and I had a little girl bulge, like how people would respond to me, how I felt people were looking at me, you know, how people on the internet would respond to the fact that I have a penis. Because I was really open about my body and my experiences as a trans woman, like the way people would talk about it, the way people just talk about women with penises.
You're probably like one of the most body positive trans activists I've encountered, to be honest.
Fuck yeah. Bodies are meant to be bodies or something.
Honestly,
like that.
I feel like it's so easy to like look at it from the outset, like someone who's like either like trying not to let it get to them or someone who's like not in this position and say like,
yeah,
to try not to let it bother you or to just say like, well, fuck their oppressive gender norms. And
yeah,
that's something that I tell myself a lot. But at the same time, these things still hurt and they still affect us.
It's death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? Like, it's this idea that, yeah, if one thing happened to me one time, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But if it is something that I have to go up against each and every moment of each and every day, or, you know, repeatedly over time, like, that gets really, really heavy.
Sometimes you don't see what gets us to our breaking points with these things.
Yeah.
sometimes
they don't live our experiences.
Exactly, exactly. And even like the ones of us who do have these experiences, who like criticize about this, there's only so much you can do to just ignore things.
Yeah, there's only so much you can take. If there's something that we as trans people can do to interrupt that, I don't see anything wrong with us doing it. Like, you know, for me, like getting surgery, people are like, oh, well, if you're just doing that for how other people will interact with you, then like, are you really doing it for yourself? Like, fucking yes, I am doing it for myself. I'm doing it to have the peace of mind of never having to fucking deal with that again. Like, I love having a vagina. I probably could have been fine with a penis, but the fact of the matter is now, like, I will now never again have to deal with all of the bullshit that being a woman with a penis brings. All of those aggressions, I don't have to deal with those anymore. And sure, there's other bullshit that I still have to deal with, but that is a huge thing that I just will never have to deal with again. And fuck anyone who tells me that it's not a valid decision that I went through bottom surgery because I did it based on how other people interact with me.
Honestly, it sounds like a decision that you made largely for the sake of your mental health.
Yeah.
We already have a hard enough time managing our mental health, even putting aside us being trans and people like seeing and interacting with our bodies in these like sometimes awful, sometimes fetishistic, sometimes yeah. just like ignorant ways. It's hard all around, and we gotta do to help ourselves.
Yeah, no, totally. And I mean, now that I'm on the other side of surgery, like, yeah, that portion of it is better. Like the way people interact with my body just feels better, doesn't feel as dysphoric, and it's also just better in general. Like, I love having a vagina. It's beautiful. I love my results. I love sex. Like, I was never a person that enjoyed sex. It was always so uncomfortable. Like, sex is great. I know what all the hype is about now.
I think if I remember right, last time we talked on the phone, when I was asking about how you've been, you said you've been hoeing around Chicago.
I've been hoeing around Chicago.
I love that. Honestly.
Pussy World Tour.
Fucking live your best life now that you feel comfortable enough to.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. Someone want to tell me why my biggest size dilator is the size of a fucking baby's head? Why does anyone's vagina have to be this wide? Okay, I know a baby's head is considerably girthier than this, but like, when will I never, ever, ever need to fit anything the size of this up my pussy? This is fucking terrifying. It goes that deep inside me to that white dot. Jesus fucking Christ, why? Thank you. That's all I have. Yes, in case you're wondering, if you're a cis woman, my pussy is probably deeper than yours. No judging, but I paid a lot of money for this pussy, so.
She has not even reached her glory days yet because it is still another 13 days before I can have penetrative sex.
Ooh.
Yeah. I already have plans for that day.
Nice.
Yeah. I just want to get bent over a kitchen sink. Is that too much to ask?
Mood?
I mean, yeah. Like, can't we all kind of relate to that?
Over the past few years, I'd like come to realize that no, most guys don't actually imagine what it's like to have a vagina while they're a teenager coming of age into their sexuality.
Oh my God, the day that I found out that most guys don't tuck their dick between their legs and picture what it would look like to have a vagina.
I did that too. So much. Though when I was a kid, and I told Jesse this story the other day and they were shocked. When I was a kid, I never heard the word vagina. I never even knew what one was. But really? And yet I still had that compulsion to tuck.
Yeah.
So make of that what you will.
I make a lot of that. I think you're trans.
I might be. I don't know.
I think you may be trans.
Let me take some more of these hormones while I decide.
Let me take more of these titty skittles to see what happens. So I was in Jersey for 3 weeks. The pain was pretty bad for most of it. Week three, it started to get a little bit better. And I was like finally walking, finally like kind of feeling like myself again. Like I was still swollen and in pain, but it was not nearly as bad. And then I took a 12-hour drive back to Chicago. and it made the pain a lot worse again.
Hi, friends. I am crying tears of joy because I have been in New Jersey for 6 weeks. And it was the fucking trip from hell from, like, start to finish. And now I am, like, less than an hour away from being back in Chicago. And I am just so incredibly relieved. My healing is going great. Right now I've been in the car for 14 hours, so I am super swollen and in pain. But, like, my doctor said I'm healing up really nicely, like, faster than a lot of other people. And now I just get to live my life and I'm back home and I'm feeling like myself again and I'm just so grateful and I love all of you.
I had to dilate in the car, which for those of you unfamiliar
with...
That
sounds like hell.
Yeah. For those of you unfamiliar with newly created vaginas or like, you know, other vaginas that have trouble... with things being put inside them, you use what is called a dilator, which is basically the least sexy dildo in the world. It is 9 inches of a cold, hard plastic, 6 of which go inside of you. And it is like girthy, rather girthy.
There's really no way to talk about it without like giggling about it.
It's like, dildo. yeah. And it goes like 6 inches inside of you and you have to do it for the first 6 weeks. You have to do it 4 times a day. I'm down to 3 times a day after 6 weeks and I'm about to go down to 2 times a day. But because I was in a 12-hour drive, I had to dilate in the car in the middle of Ohio in a park and ride with stuff covering the windows. I was just like, vulva out to the world.
Not quite the debut you wanted.
Yeah. Not quite the pussy world tour I'd imagine. No, you could say that.
I mean, you did say that you wanted to show it to everyone after. I guess the ride home wanted to give you a head start.
I suppose. I mean, I want to show it to everyone in a consensual fashion with safe people. I did not want to show it at a rest stop where no one was wearing masks in the height of a pandemic.
Oh,
and,
no.
Everyone was like wearing MAGA shit. That was not my goal.
That sounds like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, it was not the best, but it's fine. I mean, like, no one saw me, obviously, but
it still sounds like super anxiety inducing.
Oh, it was not fun. It was a super uncomfortable position. It was like halfway through the drive already. So like my swelling had already gone up a ton. When I got back to Chicago, I like collapsed onto Em's couch and cried because I was in so much pain. Em, if you're listening, thanks for my vagina.
Thank you for being so nice and patient with me while I was there trying to help.
You were super helpful. You fell yourself short.
Thank you.
Thank you. And like, my swelling was back up to what it had been a week and a half earlier. It was like I was in so much pain. I was once again, like I went back to basically being in the bed 24 hours. A nice little reminder that recovery is not linear.
I'm back in Chicago. Fuck yeah. I was walking better and then the trip back really like kicked up my inflammation. And some of my suture lines are now like open and really inflamed. And then I have this one stitch that's like right below the opening to my vagina that's like poking out and it's like so fucking teeny tiny. It's literally this one tiny suture and it's making it so difficult to sit that I've been like laying in bed most of the time, which is like feels like I'm moving backwards, but also everything else is better. Like the inflammation is down. I've been doing a lot of ice. I just orgasmed for the first time, which was cool. And yeah, for me, it's just kind of a reminder that recovery is not linear and that's okay. Like some things have gotten better, some things have gotten harder again. But things feel like they're moving in the right direction, and I'm very happy, if not a little exhausted and tired of being in bed all the time. But I'm on my way up. I'm on my way up.
And then, like, slowly started taking walks again. But then I got a freaking hemorrhoid, which, like, obviously was not in my vagina, but it was in the same region. I've been dealing with that. Like, I literally still have it. It's been a month and a half now that I've had this freaking hemorrhoid. But yeah, so that made things more painful again. But yeah, so over the past month and a half or so, things have gotten a lot better. I just answer some common questions. Yes, I can orgasm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I can orgasm multiple times. Yes, my orgasms are better than before.
Yeah.
Sorry, testosterone-fueled bodies. Estrogen is superior. It is definitely even different now because like erection is not a factor. And I had really painful erections before surgery. And I also like couldn't get hard for almost 3 years before surgery because of how painful it would be. Like my body just stopped being able to get erect, which is not super uncommon. Like not being able to get hard among trans feminine people, but a lot of folks are able to, like, if they want to take meds for erectile dysfunction like Viagra. I did not want to, A, because of dysphoria, and B, because of pain. And so yeah, so I, you know, had mediocre orgasms for most of my life. Like sex didn't really feel good. It was just like intimacy that I craved, but sex was always kind of this like awkward and uncomfortable and a lot of explaining and often a lot of pain. And like my orgasms now are great. Yes, I can self-lubricate. It varies from time to time how much. I self-lubricate a little bit every time I dilate, but I do still have to use a little bit of lube.
It actually was something that I didn't know and kept meaning to research myself, but I'm glad to actually learn that now.
It varies from person to person. Surgeons will tell you that you won't self-lubricate. Trans feminine folks will tell you that they can. Some folks will say that it's like a flood, and others will say the general understanding that I've gained from talking to a lot of people and the way one person put it to me was that you can self-lubricate. You can self-lubricate about as much as a cis woman who is 10 years your senior.
Interesting.
Yes, because among cis women, self-lubrication gets harder and harder and less as you age. So I can get approximately as wet as a 36-year-old person who is born with a vulva. And none of this is like research. I mean, I guess trans people is research. I trust the lived experiences of my community 1,000 times more than I trust any doctor. Obviously, I'm not going to have a community member slice me up just because they say they know how. I will probably go to a surgeon for that. But
there really need to be more trans doctors in this specific field.
Yeah, I mean, Marcy Bowers is the only one that I know of that like trans surgeons. I'm sure there are more, but she's super prominent. Yeah, I agree, because it's so difficult because like you are expected to trust everything your doctors say, but your doctors actually like they know how to do the surgery. They know what they've read in their research, but like ultimately the research is outdated and the research is on HRT is largely on menopausal cis women and the research on bottom surgery keeps changing and they don't actually have a lot of research on it. And there haven't really been like long-term longitudinal studies of trans feminine people or of trans masculine people to document any of these results. And so like when they tell you like, no, this won't happen or expect this, like they can only tell you what they know for certain. And what they know for certain is ultimately so little. Like they know that if you were orgasmic before surgery, that you'll probably be orgasmic after surgery. They know that they can achieve a certain depth. And that has gotten more and more certain, especially with certain versions of the surgery over the past, you know, couple of years. Like I have about approximately 6 inches of depth, which is actually like on the upper end of the range of like most vagina owners, like averages between 3 and 7 inches in depth. And I have 7 inches, or I have 6 inches of depth. Because I had robotic penile inversion vaginoplasty where they dug in through my belly button. So I got a neat little scar on my belly button. And bonus points, I have a cyborg pussy.
Finally, the trans cyberpunk future is here.
The trans cyberpunk future has arrived, and her name is the TARDIS.
Oh yeah, you were watching a lot of Doctor Who while you were in recovery.
Yeah, so my vagina's name is the TARDIS because it is now bigger on the inside.
I love it.
I was watching a lot of Doctor Who. I watched like 10 seasons while I was recovering.
Oh, wow.
That's not an exaggeration. I actually am on season 12 right now. I watched 10 years worth of it in like a month. I was in bed all day, okay? Oh, yeah. And so my clitoris is named the lesbian.
Oh, yeah. I remember you. We were talking about that too.
Yeah. 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 So since the pain has mostly subsided, one of the biggest things that I've had to deal with in terms of recovery is like working the scar tissue. And so I have to go to physical therapy. Originally, it was twice a week. Now it is about once a week. And one of the biggest objectives is to reduce the scar tissue around my vulva, which is already significantly reduced. But that is the like only thing that's like really still painful is the scar tissue, like mostly the scar tissue in my groin creases, and then like along the edges of my labia minora are really the only things that I'm dealing with right now. But so basically after I dilate at the end of the night, one of the things that I have to do is massage the scar tissue to break it down. And that's, you know, you have about like 2 to 3-ish years before it starts like getting a little bit more difficult to deal with. But the earlier you break down the scar tissue, the better. And so part of dilation, yes, like they say that dilation is to like maintain the girth and depth of the vaginal canal. But another huge portion of that is to mobilize the scar tissue to keep that skin stretchy, because your body's natural like healing process is to scar, but you don't want the inside of your vagina or your vulva to scar. The whole thing about like it closing up is like, there is actually very little evidence that that's the thing that would happen. Like maybe you could lose a little depth. Like maybe if you don't dilate for a long time, like you would need to dilate a lot to get your width back. But like that tissue is there. Like that tissue was the outside of my penis. Like that tissue is made of me. So it's not gonna, like, at least from what I've understood from reading, you know, experiences of other trans people and reading, like, doing research.
And I imagine there's not really that many or any longitudinal studies on this kind of thing.
No. Yeah, really none. What a pity.
What a pity. Big gap.
Big gap. Yeah, there's a big gap in the research on big gaps.
Big gaps.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it is all that likely that it would close up, but most of what people say is like, if you don't dilate regularly, it's like not, the tissue there is not as mobile. And so penetrative sex will be really painful and really difficult. But that even folks who like stopped dilating for a while and started again were able to get back to a place that felt good. That being said, like if people really just don't dilate at all, like eventually the scar tissue gets very, very difficult to break down and they just might not have good results in general. And so it is really incredibly important to keep dilating. But from what I can tell, it doesn't really seem like it's like closed up the way that they say it will. Like maybe it won't open because, you know, you haven't dilated and so you haven't stretched the skin, but it's not that it's closed. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's difficult to open. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And again, not a medical professional, but this is my understanding from hearing people in my community.
And I know the like dilation schedule kind of like it never stops over the course of your lifetime, but it does kind of taper down like to a significant degree, at least over time, correct?
Yeah. So I'm at 3 times a day now, up until for another 13 days. After that, I'm down to 2 times a day up until 6 months, then once a day till 9 months. And then after that, I can do 1 to 3 times a week. Some folks in the community say that after that, they're able to substitute penetrative sex for dilation.
I know that's something very common I've heard.
Yeah, my surgeon says no, but again, I trust my community. And also, like, surgeons, kind of, I feel like they have to say that in order to, because, like, if you don't dilate and then you're like, well, I lost, like, my stretchiness, or it's like, sex is painful now. Like, yeah, they want the results to be good. They want, you know, people to, like, review them well. They want people to recommend them to go there. So they want to make sure that your results are good and that they tell you, like, what they, like, medically believe is necessary.
Ideally, giving all the information that they, like, know could be necessary.
Yeah. Some of it's to prevent them from getting sued. Some of it is to, you know, have good results so that people, you know, say, hey, you know, I got a really great vulva from X and X such and such surgeon. So yeah, so dilation, I'm down to 3 times a day. Have mostly been good at keeping to that, although, like, some days is just, you know, I'm out all day. And then the other component of aftercare is douching. So I believe it's up until 12 weeks, I have to douche with a vinegar solution at least once a day. And then after that, I can go down to like 1 to 3 times a week.
Why with a vinegar solution?
So it, I mean, that's true of a lot of vulvas. So vinegar helps reduce the bacteria count, is my understanding. So a common misconception about the post-operative vagina is that it doesn't produce enough of like the good bacteria to keep it clean. And actually the opposite is true, but still a problem. Vaginas after bottom surgery closely resemble like the microbiome of a vagina with bacterial vaginosis. Yeah, so bacterial overgrowth. And so those who have had bacterial overgrowth or bacterial vaginosis know that it kind of smells a little bit. So like, I mean, recently I went a couple of days without douching and I went to pee one morning. I was like, what is that smelly smell? That smells kind of smelly. And it was me. It was my vagina. Had a mini freak out where I was like, my vagina smells. Talked to some of my fellow vagina owners about it, and they assured me that it is quite normal. So I, you know, went back to my normal douching schedule and have been mostly fine since. Eventually, I can reduce the number of times, but it's something that is still suggested that I do pretty consistently, which is like, it's fine. I can do it in the shower. Sometimes I do it after I dilate, and it smells fine after that. Ha ha, yuck it up. Smelly vagina. Yeah, ha ha.
Sorry.
Laugh at my struggles, Joey.
I'll laugh at every struggle.
Well, last time you saw my vagina, it was not nearly as pretty as it is now. I have none of my stitches anymore, but it smelled a little bit until a couple of days ago. So.
I remember those stitches were a bitch for you there.
Well, they're like dissolvable, so they like push themselves out and like, I can't even, like, that was so fucking painful as they were pushing themselves out, especially the ones near my clitoral hood. Because there's so many freaking nerve endings there. Clitorises can feel great and they can also really fucking hurt.
They're a very sensitive, delicate part of the body.
It's a very sensitive lesbian.
On anyone with any set of genitals, it's a very sensitive area. And
yeah.
You can imagine even way more sensitive after just getting out of surgery.
Yeah, no, totally. And like, because I can't do anything penetrative, but I tried to masturbate like about like 4.5 weeks after my surgery, which was definitely a mistake. And that was painful. But then like I tried again. Yeah, I was just so freaking excited. Listen to your body. I was like, this feels good. And also it hurts, but I'm going to keep going because it feels good. And then I did have an orgasm, but then it was followed by a whole mess of pain for like a week.
Ouch.
Living weird. But now it's good. And now I have great orgasms. I had one so good a couple of days ago that I was walking kind of sideways for the rest of the night. And it was only 4 p.m. when I had it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's a good way to coast down the rest of the evening.
I got it into the car with my friend and I sat down next to them and I was like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm a little wobbly. I just had a really good orgasm. And I looked at their face and they were kind of looking half asleep and they were like, Ariel, I also am wobbly because I just had a really good orgasm.
Imagine the glow off the two of you just lit the entire Chicago night sky.
It radiated across the stars.
Just across the entire universe, just straight out into the Delta Quadrant or something.
Yes, I live for it. I also commissioned an artist who does the vulva gallery to paint a picture of my vulva, and it came out beautiful. Ooh. I got it a couple of days ago.
I can't wait to see that myself. What is the name of the artist?
So their name is Hilda Atlanta, and I'm going to ask them to be on the show at a later date, but I don't know if they will have time or say yes, because they're quite a big deal on the Instagram. Their Instagram is at the Vulva Gallery, and if you go to that page and keep an eye on it over the next little bit, eventually a picture of my vulva will be up there. Nice. Who knows, by the time this episode is live, maybe my vulva will already be up there.
And that's at thevulvagallery.
Indubitably.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was my little, 3-month post-op gift for myself. And honestly, I had reservations for such a long time about this freaking surgery, but I could not be happier that I went through with it. I look at myself in the mirror now with underwear, and I'm, so euphoric about, how flat it is and the shape of my body and the way the underwear sits on my body, the way clothing fits me now. I take it off and I look at my naked body in the mirror. I'm like, damn, she's sexy. And I just feel sexy, actually sexy for the first time in my life when I'm naked.
Honestly, the best kind of gender euphoria, just being able to look at yourself in the mirror, right, and actually find yourself attractive. Because I feel like the entire trans experience for a lot of us is just trying to make ourselves look like what we're attracted to.
I avoided mirrors for such a fucking long time. I literally would pee with the lights off, because as soon as I stood up, the mirror was in front of the toilet, and I just would not want to see myself for the first 3 or 4 years of my transition. It's really only within the past 2 that I can even look at my face without makeup on. And it's such an underrated experience, being able to just look at yourself in the mirror and be okay with what you see. And that's not a uniquely trans experience, but it is often it's often worse for a lot of trans folks, because also looking in the mirror and seeing something we don't like also carries consequences of hey, if I look somewhat masked today, I can be attacked and killed for looking like this. But yes, I am very happy, and I also, I'm very aware of how much privilege I have in having been able to access the surgery, having gotten so much in donations, being, making enough money, having insurance where I can afford to take time off work. And I have a new job that has better insurance now, and I make more money here than I made before. And all of these positions, as a white, skinny, passing trans woman, I receive so much social support from my community, from cis folks especially, that trans women of color don't experience necessarily the same way. And I have so much privilege in being able to access bottom surgery when and how I did. But yeah, I think that the bare minimum is myself and other trans feminine folks like me to at the very least be able to acknowledge and name that privilege, and also then to use that privilege to create spaces of liberation for other trans and non-binary folks, which is my goal with this podcast. That's very much why I pivoted more to podcasting than sharing my story on my blog, is because it's ultimately not my story that needs to be heard more often. Yes, I have a platform, and how do I use that platform to uplift trans folks whose stories may not get told as often, and tell these stories in ways that allow the folks I interview to have agency over how their story is told? Because I can get up here and share about my pussy all day, but I also, you know, want to use this space to share other trans stories. I think it's vital.
Absolutely. Like, that's the only way that we could just keep helping each other is by uplifting each other's voices, signal boosting. I imagine, like, if not for people doing that, like, over the years, we might not even be having this conversation. You might not have had the information you need to make the informed decision that you did here.
Well, totally. I mean, I got all the information that I have on surgeries is from other members of my community. And so the least I can do is pay that forward.
100%.
And answer questions. And like the amount of people who I've sent like full on close up pictures of my vulva to over the past month, like not in a sexual way, just in like a lot of it is people who've reached out to me like, hey, like I'm considering having bottom surgery and I'm researching surgeons and I literally cannot find pictures online from your surgeon. Or like a lot of the pictures are like, hey, I got bottom surgery 2 days ago. Like this is what my vagina looks like.
Mm.
But like there's just such a lack of information out there.
It's surprisingly hard to find like images to like actually know like what the hell it's going to look like.
Yeah. And so like folks have been asking me for pictures and it's like, especially when it's members, like I'm not going to send it to like random chasers, but like when it's members of my community who are considering bottom surgery and are just curious, like what the possibilities are and like what different surgeons' results look like, of course I'm going to send those pictures because I know how hard it was for me to find information when I was looking for it.
Of course.
Yeah. So if you're listening to the show and you're considering bottom surgery, yes, the answer is yes. I will send you a picture of my vulva. don't share it around, but if you need, please
respect Ariel's consent.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't know that I have. I mean, I always have more to say about my vagina, but I don't know that
we could go on for so long about this. I'm sure.
Totally. I guess all I want to say to sign off is if you are someone who has questions about vaginoplasty, about bottom surgery, if you are a member of my community, especially who has thoughts or questions or concerns, or you're actively considering going through surgery and you're scared or you're uncertain or you're working through all of your own shit about, do I want it? Do I not want it? I was there. You are valid. Whatever you decide is valid and is the correct decision. And I am happy to chat with any of you. My Instagram DMs are open, especially always, always, always open for members of my community.
And definitely, definitely take them up on that if you can. I know that talking to Ariel about this has helped me personally a lot in my own decisions in this neighborhood.
Love you.
This has been great. Nice talking to you about this.
Yeah. So if you are a trans or non-binary person and you're planning or thinking about going through with any sort of medical step in your transition or any sort of surgery, just know that you're not alone and that it's okay if you're fucking scared and your feelings are valid and you are valid and any decision you make is the right one because it's the one that's the best for you. And it's okay if you take your time with that. It's okay if you're not ready to make a decision, but it's also okay to trust yourself. And that was something that was really hard for me because I spent a long time in my life being told by the world that I couldn't trust myself, couldn't trust my understanding of reality, couldn't trust my understanding of my own experiences. And I think that's, you know, something that as trans and non-binary folks, we experience a lot. And, you know, for marginalized people more broadly, we experience that gaslighting of our experiences a lot. But your understanding of your own self and of the world around you is correct. You can trust yourself. You know what's going on. Your perceptions are rooted in reality and you're doing okay. And if you are a cisgender person who is listening to this episode, maybe you have someone in your life who is pursuing medical transition, maybe a surgery, maybe you don't. try to understand, try to meet them where they're at, try to understand their realities, understand that this is not easy, understand that this is scary, understand that no matter how long we've wanted it, no matter how certain we are of our experiences and of our reality, like, we may need a little extra support right now. And just love us the best that you can. And be there for the people in your lives.
So naturally, I assume you are all wondering what it's like to get fucked in my new vaginal canal. Sometimes I refer to it as that during sex, and my partner gets, it's just a mood killer. I don't know why. I do know why. Anyway, yeah, so as of July 15th, I have been cleared to have penetrative sex, which has been something I have been imagining my entire life. And ever since I booked my surgery, I have been sort of holding this date of July 15th, 2021 in my head as like, that is the date that I get to get fucked for the first time in my life. I've talked about this a bunch in the podcast, but like, because of my bottom dysphoria, I have really only had any sort of penetrative sex like four times in my life. I was just like not into the idea of penetration during sex when I had a penis. And also, a lot of you know that I have a weird thing about my butt. I just don't like anything in or near my butt, especially my butthole. So yeah, so like never really explored penetration much at all with previous partners. So I was really excited for what it would be like to explore this with someone I liked and trusted. I've been seeing someone for a while now. You know, we started dating in June. And when that July 15th date rolled around, I was like, all right, Pikachu, I choose you. And yeah, like we set aside some time. And honestly, and I think like this is true of a lot of vagina owners, correct me if I'm wrong, the first time was like weird and it kind of really hurt a lot. And my PT said that I had some internal scarring. And my partner was super understanding. It was lovely. Didn't love it. I was so anxious that like my pussy just like tightened on up. And it was pretty difficult for me to enjoy it. And I was super frustrated because I was like, ah, fuck, I look forward to this my entire life. And I was also really worried because there are definitely trans feminine folks who, after bottom surgery, don't have enough width in order to have penetrative sex that is enjoyable for both people. So it was, you know, I mean, that hasn't really happened much with the surgeon that I went to, according to all the reviews I read and the folks I've talked to. But it is somewhat of a possibility. And so I was just like really panicked and waited a bit before trying again. And then after a while, I was like, all right, let's give it another shot. Started like hoeing around Chicago a little bit, as it were. And yeah, like started experimenting with different positions. I have discovered that I quite enjoy getting fucked from behind, which I think is true of a lot of vagina owners because of where the penetrative partners, whatever their, if it's a strap, if it's a penis, where it hits inside of me is like right on my G-spot, the elusive G-spot. And I've liked experimenting with toys a bunch. I've got so many cool sex toys, some penetrative, some not. Got a really cool glass dildo, a juice pot toy from Dame Products. I got a clit suction toy, which is fucking cool, but not necessarily like my speed because I don't love like super hyper focused clitoral sensation, I have discovered. And also like I'm mostly healed, but I do definitely still have some hypersensitivity to touch, which I am hoping goes away eventually. And yeah, just kind of like allowing myself over the past few months to explore what I like, what I don't like, finding people that are excited to explore that with me, which like I've actually had a pretty easy time with because let's face it, like eating pussy is great. Who does not going to be like, oh, like eat my pussy. And someone's like, eh, Like, yeah, obviously people can say no and like consent is everything. And that's been awesome. And I'm literally just at the beginning here. So there are so many new adventures to be had. But I'm just so ding dang grateful that I am able to have all of these experiences. Like, modern medicine is a fucking marvel because my vagina is a work of art. Also, yes, I can get wet. I have discovered it mostly happens after I orgasm. And pro tip to really anyone with a vagina, but especially trans femmes, orgasm before getting fucked. It makes everything better. Because since I mostly self-lubricate when I orgasm, if someone like goes down on me or just like gives me an orgasm with any sort of stimulation before we do penetration, then I am much more relaxed and able to enjoy it. And relaxation is really important when you are a vagina owner who is being penetrated. Yeah, so just a little pro tip. And also, like, take things at your own speed. If you are new to penetrative sex, whoever you are, if you are getting penetrated in the vagina or the butt, take things at your own speed. Communicate with your partner. Communication is not unsexy during sex. Communication is so sexy. And when you talk about things during sex, it makes everything better. So whether you are fucking randos or partners or whoever you are having sex with, talking about things makes things better for everyone. And that's true across the board. So I will hop off my soapbox now, even though that is literally what y'all signed up for, is hearing me on my soapbox for however long my episodes are, an hour or whatever. I don't know. I don't keep track of this shit. Yeah. Thanks. Bye. That's all for today, folks. Don't forget to subscribe to and review this podcast so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes. If you feel inclined to support this work financially, you can head to patreon.com/transandcaffeinated. You can follow my personal accounts on Twitter and Instagram at Ariel R. Gordon, and you can follow at transandcaffeinated on Instagram and Facebook. Now it's time for credits. We love credits. You can follow the show's editor and music composer, Joey, on Twitter at Nora Q. Rosa. You can also check out her music under the name Odio Hime on Bandcamp at odiohime.bandcamp.com. That is odiohime.bandcamp.com, as well as on Spotify, Apple Music, and anywhere else that you can find music. You can follow the show's closing music composer, Helena Drajansky, on Instagram at TheGayAgenda95. You can follow her music on Instagram at Helena Ford Project and on Bandcamp at helenaford.bandcamp.com. You can also find her work featured in the Transformations Marketplace on transandcaffeinated.com. I'll see you in 2 weeks on the next episode of Trans and Caffeinated.
I just thought Instagram needed to know that there is a much too girthy, let's just call it what it is, dildo 6 inches deep in my pussy right now. And I thought I needed to tell you all, because what's oversharing at this point?